Stay tuned for Juno Afternoon. We'll learn about the rain tree quilting and the upcoming kids sewing camp. Bill Legere will be here to highlight KTOO's 40th anniversary events. We'll learn about the adult prom coming up to benefit KXLL, as well as upcoming events with Discovery Southeast. The Riders Almanac, music and more, that's on the Juno Afternoon. Weather for this afternoon, tonight, and tomorrow, some increasing clouds and a chance of thunderstorms. Sometime this afternoon near the Canadian border. Clouds dissipating on Friday, though, highs up to 68.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes across the country have struggled for years to ensure that people arrested for serious crimes are taken to court. Prosecutions are steadily increasing in Indian Country, but advocates say there's still a long way to go. Matt Lazo reports from Washington.
The Justice Department sent Congress a report that includes good news for Indian Country. Since 2009, criminal prosecutions on Native lands have shot up more than 50%. Oklahoma Republican Congressman Tom Cole says laws like the Violence Against Women Act, which expanded the power of tribal courts over some non-natives, are having a real impact.
Because so many reservations have such high crime rates, and quite often not from locals, but from people coming on knowing that they have limited jurisdiction and really strained law enforcement. So you get a lot of non-natives committing crimes on Indian land. Everybody ought to have adequate legal protection.
Cole says the new data is good news, but he says many tribes still need more federal assistance, which he says he's trying to convince House leaders to support.
Some tribes have the ability to finance their own justice systems. Others really are pretty challenged in that regard, so we're going to try and get there, but it is probably an area we're going to need to put more money.
But with sequestration cutting every budget in the federal government, it could prove difficult to convince lawmakers to send more money to Indian Country. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Oglala Sioux people will decide in a referendum next year if alcohol can be sold on the Pine Ridge Reservation. The tribe has had a longstanding prohibition on alcohol sales. The tribal council approved the reservation-wide referendum by a vote of 9-7. Like many others, Charles Michael Ray followed the debate on Keeley Radio and has this report.
The proposal to legalize alcohol on Pine Ridge elicits a strong reaction from both sides. Tribal Council Representative Paul Little disputes the idea that the tribe could benefit from revenue raised from alcohol sales.
The tribe might make net $1 million, but the external cost to the people, to society in general, to everything else other than that profit, would be negative, in the hole, in the red.
But those in favor of a tribal-wide vote to end prohibition counter that all the revenue from alcohol sales is now going off the reservation to places like White Clay. Council Representative Robin Tapio argues that alcohol taxes can fund much-needed treatment programs.
You know what we have? We have people lined up begging to go to treatment, and there's no treatment centers that will take them. We have people, you talk to every one of those people sitting in White Clay, and they don't want to be sitting there. They would rather be in a detox. So where are we going to get the money?
A vote on tribal prohibition won't come until 2014. In the meantime, the council approved placing a permanent port of entry at the reservation border near the town of White Clay, aimed at curbing the flow of alcohol onto Pine Ridge. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Tribal leaders met in Albuquerque this week to discuss energy development in Indian Country. The Developing Tribal Energy Resources and Economies Conference included sessions on topics like tribal utilities and how to do business abroad. Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley says he attended the conference to hear the latest on energy development. He also hoped to discuss strategies for working with outside companies on renewable energy.
We'd like to have a little bit more ownership in the development so that our kids or young people will learn how to run those. And so as the year go by, maybe after so many years, Navajo can purchase or buy out the partner owner with that, and then we run it ourselves from there. That's our goal.
Shelley says a solar panel manufacturing facility is expected to start operations soon on the Navajo Reservation. During this month in 2011, First Lady Michelle Obama hosted tribal leaders, Native athletes, and children at a Let's Move in Indian Country event at the White House. They planted a Three Sisters garden that included corn, beans, and squash. The Let's Move initiative focuses on ending childhood obesity with physical activity and healthy eating. For National Native News, I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, and it is a gorgeous afternoon, and that weather is expected to continue for the next several days in spite of some clouds that might be flitting around out there. With me right now is our station manager, Bill Legere. We're talking about the KTOO 40th anniversary events. And I have some questions, Bill, but sure. I'll let you begin. What are the key events? When do they begin? And what should we be looking for? And then I'd like to delve into a little bit of our history, if we could.
Sure, yeah. So we have four anniversaries coming up, actually. So the 40th is the big one for KTOO radio. That's the 40th anniversary of when KTOO FM signed on the air on January 27th, 40 years ago this coming January. K2TV is celebrating its 35th anniversary this fall on Tuesday, October 1st. It's 35 years of television. And then more recent anniversaries, 360 North turned 6 years old on December 1st, and KRNN and KXLL celebrate their seventh anniversaries on the 12th. So we're kind of rolling all of this up into, you know, one big year-long celebration of not only the history but the future of KTOO. And we've got a couple of events that I just want to mention, Lori, that are kind of long lead time things that people might want to think about. One of them, one of the anniversary events, is a trip to see, to be in the studio audience for A Prairie Home Companion at the Fitzgerald Theater on the 21st of September in St. Paul, Minnesota. And we're hoping to get a good group of KTOO members and listeners together to go as a group. We'll have a chance to meet Garrison and the cast. Alaska Brewing Company is hosting a special reception for us in St. Paul. We'll have a tour of Minnesota Public Radio, and it's all within walking distance of the Fitzgerald Theater. And that's a fundraising event for us, so there will be a cost to members for the ground package, the hotel, the tickets to the show, the airport transfers, but people can make their own airline reservations for that. You can find out more about that on our website at ktoo.org/anniversary.
Do you have a sense of what that package might cost for those?
It'll be $750 per person for the ground-only portion of
it. Okay.
And that includes, as I said, the receptions, the tours, the tickets to the show, the transfers, and the three nights at the St. Paul Hotel, which is the classic downtown Baranoff equivalent hotel in St. Paul.
And that the show itself is the 21st.
The 21st.
The three nights would the other nights bracket the 21st.
It's, I think the there's some flexibility, but to take full advantage of it, you'd probably want to travel on Thursday and be there Friday night for the receptions and Saturday night for the show and then leave on Sunday. But you could add it on to another trip or use miles or the the airfare part of it's up to you to figure out the best way to get there. And the other big great thing is that Constance Baltic, who's a well-known Juneau artist, has donated this gorgeous print. It's called Waterfall Salmon Creek, and we've made a limited edition poster from the print, and that's on sale as an anniversary fundraiser. The prints are $200 a piece, and they're signed and numbered by Constance. It's the first time she's done a print. She's pretty excited about it, and we are too. Just, it's a beautiful, high-quality print, and for a gift of $200 to KTOO, you get the print, DVD about Constance showing her at work, painting in her studio, and actually going to the location where she painted Waterfall Salmon Creek, and a discount on framing and matting, and she signs and numbers them. So if you have a special number, you can request that number. And those will be on sale throughout the anniversary year.
Would folks just come here to secure that?
You can buy it online, again, at ktlo.org/anniversary, or you can just stop by, and it's the Painting Center lobby. You can take a look at it. And in either case, if you don't want to do it online, you can contact Christy Chambor, who's our development director, and Christy can tell you more about the trip and about the print.
What's Christy's number? Do you have that offhand? Is it our main number?
586-1670.
That's something also that's been around for about 40 years. It's our phone number.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit of history.
Sure.
A little bit
here,
of the history.
You were here for a good chunk
of it. I was here pretty early on because I've been here 35 years, and I started out as a volunteer in radio, both doing some news and some music programs, mm-hmm. and then eventually, of course, became an employee. And I'm back to being a volunteer. So radio is the oldest component of KTOO,
right.
And then TV came 5 years later. Can you talk a little bit about the history of radio? I know a couple of the folks who helped establish it, and as I recall, it was in a back room at Juno Douglas High School when it first went on the air.
Yeah, a little before my time. I got here in 1985, but having been in Alaska for 5 years before that, I was somewhat familiar with K2's early years and growth. But it's a great story. It's I think it's indicative of the time when you think of all the great institutions that were created in the 70s and early 80s in Juneau. I think of Perseverance and Aware and the Fiddlehead Restaurant and the Folk Festival. So something must have been going on here that empowered people to think that we can create our own institutions and we can do it with nothing. That's before the oil boom when these institutions were created. So it wasn't the riches of the state of Alaska. It was, I think, pure excitement and energy of people who put these things together. And K2 was one of those things. It started with a group of people who figured out that they could get a license to build a FM radio station, the first FM station in Juneau. There were only two other radio stations at the time, KINY and KCHNO, had both been around for a very long time. But this would be community-owned and run by volunteers, and there's a little booklet by Elaine Mitchell, who is the founding mother, that says that you probably would never need more than $10,000 a year to run the radio station, and you could ask the state for a grant for a little bit of money, and then you could do it on a shoestring.
And in some ways, that is exactly how it got started.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the numbers of volunteers that have contributed and continue to contribute to the on-air presence of KTOO radio.
Yeah, and those, I think the DNA has never changed for KTOO, but the role of volunteers and the way the DNA exhibits itself has. So, you know, I thought about this a few years ago. It was kind of a scrappy little group of people who thought they can do anything, and they were a little geeky for even before the word geek was known. So it was a group of people who figured out how they could use technology of the era to do something really interesting for the community, and I think that's been the lineage here, what I would consider the DNA, because we did it again with the invention of television. That was done by a scrappy little group of people who got some old equipment from the state and parlayed it into a TV station. We did it again with the start of Gavel to Gavel in 1995. We, just kind of muscled our way into the Capitol building and figured out how we could put the legislature on TV. And we did it again when we bought the two FM stations that were on the market from an absentee owner. Not much was happening with the two stations, and we were able to scrape together the funding and figure out how to cram three stations into the space of one. So I think that's been the really interesting heritage.
You talk about the DNA, and one of the things I've wondered is, how would you describe KTOO radio in particular, because it does have the longest history, in terms of how it has evolved? Although the DNA may be the change, there has been DNA may not have changed, but there has certainly been some evolution. How would you describe that?
Yeah. Well, for some people, the people who are here really at the beginning would, probably loved the baby, because it was, rough around the edges, but it was all local. It was pre-NPR, so there was no national news on the program schedule, believe it or not, at the very beginning. And then when NPR came along, it was, there was only a little bit of that. So certainly the programming has changed over the years, and I hope it's kept up. You know, I think our biggest challenge these days is not money, but remaining relevant, because people get media in so many different ways now. And you know, we used to have a lock on Juneau because our, you know, if you lived here, you could only get 3 radio stations and 2 TV stations, and that's not the case anymore. People can get anything they want all the time, anytime. So our challenge now is to be relevant as, you know, as we move forward and offer people what they want, when they want it, and how they want it. So we have to be on all devices. We can't just be on the air, on radio, on TV anymore. We have to be on your phone, on your desktop, on your tablet. We have to be there in social media to continue to be relevant. So that's a pretty big challenge these days.
And the other, and this is somewhat ironic when I look at the KTOO website, there are pictures. And in the past, you know, I've always said radio is so wonderful, you can do it in your bathrobe and people won't know the difference. And in fact, now there are illustrations of various news stories, and that's another, I would guess, need that you fill if you are going to compete.
Yeah, yeah, and our website has actually surpassed our over-the-air listening about a year ago. We have about 100,000 unique visitors a month to the website, and of course only, you know, 24,000 adults or people over 12 years old in Juneau, so we're, you know, obviously reaching beyond the boundaries of Juneau. And the web is a visual medium, and so radio reporters are learning how to take pictures and shoot video and do graphics and maps to go along with their stories. And, you know, that's, I think there's an expectation. We went, about a year ago, we made the transition from doing some of our news on the web to doing all of our news on the web. So you get the verbatim transcript of every story. So you don't have to listen, you can read it. We also now post stories to the web before they go on the air on radio. So as soon as the story's available, there's, you know, we figured there's no reason to make people wait for 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. If we have the story this afternoon, it'll be put up on the website pretty quickly.
You mentioned that in today's world where we can pick and choose media from anywhere at any time, that it's important to provide audiences what they want when they want it. How do you know what that is?
Well, there's a lot of research, and you know, we traditionally have done research for TV and radio listening and viewing. The interesting thing about the web is you can see it in real time. I mean, we can look and see how many people are on the website right now and where they're coming from at any given minute of the day. So that's one way. But the other way that we do it here is, which I think is the counterbalance to being driven by the numbers, is to listen to people. So I have a great board of directors, which has expanded over the years. We have 11 people on the board. We have 30 or 40 people on the community advisory board, and we have that conversation with them all the time. How are you using media? Who should we be talking to about how media is being used? And so I think that's what will distinguish us from outside media, is that we're here, and we know people, and that, you know, the classic somebody in Foodland will tell you what they think. And you don't have to pay anybody to do that kind of research.
Are there openings on the Community Advisory Board? I didn't realize it was so large, and I'm sure you want it to be demographically representative. I've known that having a board of directors has certainly defined us as a community-based broadcasting organization. What about the Community Advisory Council? What do they do for you, and is there room?
Sure. They're actually a requirement of our federal funding to make sure that we're responsive to the community, and we take that seriously here. So every public station has a Community Advisory Board. We've decided to make ours pretty broad and to have a large number of people so that we can really talk to, you know, all walks of life. The board just last week filled up the terms for another year, but they're 1-year terms, and the board of directors appoints them in June for meetings that start in September.
So be aware of it for the
for
next
year.
For
a year from now, right.
You know, you mentioned funding, and certainly that has shaped television and how it's managed and what its mission has been. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's... That's, you know, been a big change over the years. When K2TV went on the air as a PBS station, it was a standalone station. You know, all the program decisions were made here, and there were people in the control room who put the tapes on the air and recorded the satellite feeds and did news, local news, which I know people who were around in those days still miss it, still miss the two iterations of Juneau and Southeast News that we tried in the early days. The bottom for TV fell out in terms of state funding in 1994 when the legislature just slashed public broadcasting funding dramatically. And between the end of the session and June 1st, K2 lost $1 million that year in state funding alone. So, and that triggered a decline in our federal grants as well. So that's the point where we had to make a really drastic change to TV. We stopped delivering TV to Southeast Alaska directly from Juneau. That was a big expense. And we partnered with two other public TV stations in Alaska to kind of pool resources. And so we stopped doing the PBS programming part of it here. And that moved to Fairbanks in 1995. And last summer, on July 1st of 2012, it moved from Fairbanks to Anchorage. And Anchorage is now kind of the home of PBS for the entire state. And as a result, we saved all the expense of having a bunch of people putting PBS programs on the air, which cost about $1 million to do that. Both what we pay PBS, we would be paying PBS about $500,000 a year. And then we need 6 or 7 employees to handle putting those on the air. So we took, so we left that behind, and that was sad for a lot of people losing, you know, the heart of public TV, of losing the control over the PBS programming directly. But we put our efforts into Alaska television content, so that's Gavel to Gavel and 360 North. So we're back up at about the same size we were in 1995, but we're now spending that money on Alaska content and on Alaska programming. So we now program a full channel, full-time channel of Alaska TV called 360 North, which is seen everywhere in the state. Includes lots of Juneau content. So you'll not only see the legislature, but you can see Wearable Art and Juneau World Affairs Council lectures and the roller derby, Roller Girls, lots of Juneau culture and history that we're now presenting everywhere in Alaska.
And
the American Graduate, Project Laurie, which
worked on 360.
That aired statewide on 360 North.
A lot of historical stuff. I've seen some television programs, Alaska Review, for example, that dates back to the late 70s and early
80s.
And
people had a lot of hair in those days.
Provides a lot of memory of, as you say, kind of some history. That was a public affairs program with Eric Eckholm and
Mark Badger.
And I heard portions of it recently, and it took me back to the days covering the Alaska legislature. Let's talk about Gavel to Gavel and the role it plays in Alaska now. Has that been also a financial support, I would guess, to sustaining KTOO-TV?
Yeah, it... we don't make any money on it. It pays for itself, basically. But it's such an important thing to do, to open up the government process and the legislature to every Alaskan. And I was reading old news clippings when we were preparing the anniversary website, and the legislature told us we would not be allowed to do it in 1994. And I have a very polite letter from Drew Pierce and Gail Phillips. It said, "Dear Mr. Legere, thank you very much for your idea, but the majority has met and decided that you will not be allowed to provide television coverage of the legislature." And we proposed to do a 2-week trial to show how it would work. And all the state newspapers editorialized that that was a really bad decision. And so 2 weeks later, they reversed the decision and said, "You can come in on the same ground rules as all of the other media. We won't give you any special privileges or accommodation, but just like if it's an open meeting, you can come in just like a newspaper reporter or a TV news station from Anchorage." And to this day, we have no agreement or contract with the legislature. We're there as independent news media, which is terrific because it means that all the decisions about what's on Gavel to Gavel are made by journalists, not politicians, which is really important. And the big change there is that it, first of all, it's become an institution. So all that nervousness at the beginning, legislators thought they would be embarrassed because he'd be caught sleeping or not listening, you know, or there would be grandstanding for the cameras. And none of that happened. What we saw is that I think legislators became a little better dressed when they knew they were going to be on TV. Meetings start on time more than they used to, so at least for part of the session. And there really hasn't been any politicking or grandstanding that I've seen for the cameras. But what's really happened now is that Alaskans, you know, it's like a utility. We're part of the woodwork in the Capitol building. And it's, you know, on tap now. But more people use it online than watch it on TV. Because you can go online and watch the video of anything live that's happening in the Capitol. You can see up to 10 different things at once. Or you can play it back later. And we started doing video on demand 2 years ago, and now everything, it's all video. So in the early days, we did audio only on demand on the Internet, but now you can watch anything that happens in the building.
So I have a couple more questions for you, Bill. Do you see radio and television being around in 40 years? I look at, we are surrounded by this heavy-duty infrastructure. Well, that's kind of a, you know, a crystal ball, but already in the last 5 years, I'm looking at the various states that the radio and then TV and 360 North and Karen and KXL, and it seems like change is certainly speeding up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think TV will be dramatically different within the next few years. I mean, already more people watch TV via Hulu and Netflix and, you know, on-demand services than they do over the air. And the audience for PBS and all the commercial networks has plummeted. Mm-hmm. And all the big national networks are having a real hard time figuring out what their role is going to be. I think that we will want to think of ourselves less as a TV and radio station and more as a public media organization.
Already the new combination statewide is called Alaska Public Media.
Yeah, and somebody told me that you know now you should think of TV and radio as like the shipping department. They ship the content that the creative people produce in news and public affairs and arts and culture, but there are other ways to ship it. There's, you know, the Internet and social media and the on-demand services and live streaming. So I think we will be less worried about the exact future of TV and radio. I personally think, I'm an old radio guy, I think radio is such a ubiquitous and inexpensive medium that I think it will be here for a very, very long time. You know, it may be the lead-in to send people to the website to get more information, but radio is the one thing you can listen to while you're online. You can take it everywhere. It's in every automobile in America by law. It is cheap and not getting more expensive. It's free. You don't have to subscribe to get it. So I think there's a long future for radio. Commercial radio has changed a lot in my lifetime. You know, there's very little investment anymore, on average, in news on commercial radio, and a few big national companies own thousands and thousands of radio stations and run them from big corporate headquarters. But Juneau's lucky. We have not only KTOO, but we have a group of locally owned commercial radio stations where the decisions about what's on the air are made right here in Juneau. So we're kind of unique in that way these days. But
Bill, before we sign off, what portion or percentage of the funding for KTOO radio comes from the local and other donors? You mentioned radio's free, but I'm reminded during pledge drives that it's not really
free lunch,
so I'm just wondering, and has that percentage changed in the 40 years of the lifetime of radio?
Well, I can't speak for the very early days when it was all
$10,000 and a bunch of volunteers.
Yeah, right, and and a few memberships. We're about 30% membership supported by individual donations, about another 30% or so from underwriting. We earn about 10 to 15% through events and product sales and doing production services. And then the federal funding is now the smaller.
$1 in $4.
Yeah, the smaller part of it.
Yeah.
So in a good way, we're not that dependent The federal funding is vitally important. I don't want to say we're not dependent on it, but we're resilient because we're getting, you know, our support from a variety of places. So if there's a downturn in the economy and people pledge less, we can rely on the underwriting support sure. more, you know. So I think it's a pretty good mix.
Well, thanks. I do have one more question, but I want to just make a quick observation in the 35 years I've been around K2 as well. Jeff Brown is my engineer today, and it's wonderful to walk through the station and see folks who have been here from the beginning or very close to the beginning and yet see a new generation step up to radio and find it to be fun and exciting. And it's wonderful to see the intergenerational energy that's going on here. And the last question, Bill, is when is the cake? So we can get a poster and we can take a trip, but when are we cutting
are we
the cake as a community?
We thought we'd do a lot of different things, so we're actually having some kind of a celebration every month, and we've already had, like, we had Will Schertz here last week, the NPR Puzzle Master. We did a State of the Station event where we invited people in to hear hear the serious part of, how the business is going. So we don't have any one time, because we have four different dates to celebrate, we don't have one time to cut a cake, but, you know, we'll figure out something.
Or maybe cupcakes four times.
Four times, yeah.
Well, happy anniversary to the various components of KTOO. And as you said, all of that information can be found on the station's website at ktoo.org/anniversary.
And there's a terrific timeline of KTOO's history with photographs from 1974 on. So that's fun in and of itself, is to look at the fashions and the styles.
The new visual radio.
From the, from the very early days. It's kind of, it seems like only yesterday, but as I said, people had lots of hair in those days.
Thank you for joining
Thank
us,
you,
Bill,
Larry.
And for sharing some of the history of KTOO. We'll be back to Juno Afternoon after this.
Tried and powder mill. Has your family tried and powder mill? Well, if your family's tried them all, you know you're satisfied, and they're the real hot item powder mill. Be kind to your web-footed friends, for a duck may be somebody's mother. Be kind to your friends in the swamp, where the weather is very cold and damp. You may think that this is the end, but it's not, because there's one more chorus. Be kind to your friends in the swamp, where the weather is very cold and damp.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling, and with me is Annie Bartholomew. She is the assistant program manager for KXLL Radio, part of the KTOO or K3 family, now they call it. And she's going to tell us about an adult prom. So start out, Annie. What qualifies to be an adult?
You're over 21.
Okay. 21 or over, I suppose.
21 or over.
Okay.
Yeah. We like to do events for high schoolers, too, but we figured these guys just had their prom, or they had their prom a few years ago. So we want to give an opportunity for the older folks in Juneau to come re-experience prom with a full bar.
When, where?
So it's this Saturday night.
Oh.
It's from 8 to midnight, and we're hosting it in part with Rotaract. And Rendezvous is doing the open bar. We have Southeast Living Magazine, and they will be doing photographs from 8:30 to 9:30. And Night Moods is doing our balloon ensembles. So it's going to be over the top 80s party like you've never experienced before.
Come on, Annie. Were you born in the 80s? Were you even alive?
I wasn't.
Come on. Be honest.
But I am DJing.
Where will it be?
It's going to be at the Jack.
Okay. 8 to midnight on Saturday. What's the cost?
It's $10 at the door.
Okay. And when you said that you'll be doing the DJing, how are you picking the music? Are you taking requests?
I don't know if the songs are 80s enough. No, we're going to come up with a good playlist of 80s songs that we think are very danceable, but also probably some cheesy slow songs, you know, anything that'll make.
Got some favorites?
Yeah, I've actually been looking them up. Time of My Life from Dirty Dancing. The scene with Patrick Swayze. I'm hoping someone recreates that on the dance floor. But also Forever Young, not the Bob Dylan version, the 80s synthesizer one.
Now, do all of the proceeds go to KXLL? You mentioned working with Rotaract, which is the kind of young person's version of Rotary, young being 18 to 30.
Mm-hmm.
What's that partnership like, and how will the proceeds be shared?
Rotaract is doing it as a fundraising event, and they get to choose the organization that they donate the proceeds to, and KXLL was their chosen organization, so it really is awesome to be working with this group who is so organized. They just have everything covered.
Wonderful. I want to know a little bit about kind of the dress code. What are you hoping for, like powder blue tuxes?
Exactly.
Okay.
But if you don't have formal attire, anything 80s will be appropriate. So big hair, powder blue suits, power suits for the women.
I think platform shoes might be on the list.
Are you sure? I thought they were way over by the 80s.
Oh, you might be right.
That's the late 70s.
Annie, I think you're correct. Apparently you've had an appropriate American history tutor in your life.
I just listen to music.
So why did Rotaract pick KXLL? What about your mission of your station, of the station that attracted Rotaract? What did they say when they came to you?
Well, they match the age group that we're shooting for, 18 to 28-year-olds in Juneau, with people of all ages also interested in the station. But that's who we're really trying to hit. And we host our own community-building music-theme parties, and so it just seemed like a good match for both of us because we're both trying to create a positive environment in Juneau for Juneau's young people who may not have as many opportunities. So,
does KXLL, you mentioned, yes, we do a variety of events. Does KXLL offer events for those who are under 21 as well? Let's talk a little bit about that, because I've often wondered about those kind of gap years from when you're out of high school to when you are of age and can purchase alcohol, because I know a lot of the events do include alcohol. How does KXLL reach that 18 to 20-year-old group?
Right now, we have some high school DJs, and I've been doing a lot of talking with them about how we can reach that group. When I was in high school, we had many parties that were for 18 and over, and we'd like to get back to that. We're just thinking of what are some ways that we can attract this group of students, you know, because when I was in high school, we listened to completely different music. Now people are into the rave culture and that kind of electronic scene. So really we're having a lot of discussions about how we can reach that group. And if there are people who are 18 to 21 or even 17 who have some great ideas for me, my email is annie@ktoo.org, and I'd really like to hear from them because this is a group we really want to reach out to.
We were just talking with Bill Legere about the Community Advisory Council that is comprised of 30 to 40 folks from the community who give feedback to K2. Does KXLL have its own community advisory group that gives you feedback from the generation you're trying to reach, or are you plugged into the larger group?
We're plugged into the larger group. Most of our feedback comes directly from our listeners or from our volunteers and those groups that they represent within the community.
You mentioned you have some high school volunteers. folks who might be interested in that, could they email you as well about a training opportunity, or do you
certainly.
All that you need? Okay.
Yeah, we're always seeking new hosts. Right now we have a lot of openings during the daytime.
Oh.
So if there's someone who has an opening during the day or doesn't have a summer job, it would be really great if we could train them to be an on-air host for us.
Do you have age restrictions, or could somebody as young as, say, 15, 16?
I started my show when I was 16 on Exelon Radio. So the process to do that is to email me or Jesse 20 songs that you'd like to play on Exelon Radio so we can figure out if you're fit for that station or lead you to Karen and if you have a different interest in music. So usually we're seeking people who listen to the station, are a fan of the station, and are interested in emulating that kind of music.
Okay. That sounds exciting. I think radio is a lot of fun. So it would be Annie, A-N-N-I-E.
At KTOO.org.
And what's Jesse's email?
J-E-S-S-I-E.
I-E, okay.
At CoastAlaska.org.
At CoastAlaska. So an opportunity to get more deeply involved with KXLL. So the adult prom is Saturday night, 8 to midnight at the Jack. Photos will be taken. Annie will be DJing. So the critical question, is there a costume contest?
Oh, there is a costume contest and dance contest. We didn't want to do a prom king and queen because some people still have a lot of feelings about that. So we decided that to win, you have to be the greatest dancer out there. And we haven't determined how we will decide that, but Rotaract is securing some pretty great prizes for us.
So costume and dancing both matter.
Costume or dancing. I think there's probably going to be two separate groups. So
very good.
Even if you don't have the moves, you still have a chance to wow us with your costume.
Excellent. All right. That's Saturday night, the adult prom, sponsored by Rotaract here in Juneau and benefiting KXLL Radio. And if you're interested in knowing more about being a part of KXLL and being on the air, contact Annie at KTOO.org. Thanks for joining us, Annie. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me on the show.
All righty.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 12th of June, 2013. It's the birthday of Juna Barnes, born in Cornwall-on-Hudson, New York in 1892. She was a reporter, starting out writing articles for Vanity Fair and The New Yorker, then became part of a bohemian scene in Greenwich Village. She published an early collection of poems and drawings called The Book of Repulsive Women. She moved to Paris in the 20s and became friends with writers there, including Eliot, Gertrude Stein, James Joyce. And after reading Joyce's Ulysses, she said, "I shall never write another line. Who has the nerve to after that?" But almost 15 years later, she published Nightwood, an experimental novel about a woman named Nora Flood, her love affairs, and her spiritual advisor, a transvestite named Dr. O'Connor. The book was rejected by all the American publishers she submitted it to, but T.S. Eliot loved it, so he published it himself and wrote an introduction. It had a great influence on many later experimental writers of the 50s and 60s, and it's become a cult favorite. For the last 42 years of her life, Juna Barnes lived as a recluse in New York City. Writers came to pay homage to her, but she sent them away. Her neighbor, E.E. Cummings, used to check on her by yelling out his window. She spent her last 30 years working on a long poem that was found in her apartment when she died. In 1973, she told her editor, "It's terrible to outlive your own generation." It's the birthday of Anne Frank, born in Frankfurt, Germany in 1929. She received a diary as a present on her 13th birthday and immediately began writing in it. When her older sister Margot got notice to report to a Jewish work camp, the Franks went into hiding in Amsterdam along with four other people living there in the annex for 2 years. Her earliest journal entries are about her grades and classmates. She wrote that since she did not have any close friends, she would treat her diary as though it were a close friend, and she began addressing it by the imaginary name of Kitty. She wrote to her diary, "I hope I shall be able to confide in you completely, as I never have been able to do in anyone before, and I hope that you will be a great support and comfort to me." Anne Frank wrote in her diary regularly while she was in hiding, but she didn't just write about the Nazi persecution or the experience of living in secret. She also wrote about the ordinary details of her adolescent life, how much she hated potatoes, and how her older sister was clearly her parents' favorite. On August 4th, 1944, the annex was raided by Nazi police, and Anne and her family were among the last Jews shipped out of the Netherlands to concentration camps. Anne Frank died of typhus in Belsen, 6 weeks before the camp was liberated by the Allies. And here's a poem by Philip Larkin entitled Talking in Bed. Talking in bed ought to be the easiest. Lying together there goes back so far, an emblem of two people being honest. Yet more and more time passes silently outside, the wind's incomplete unrest builds and disperses clouds about the sky, and dark towns heap up on the horizon. None of this cares for us. Nothing shows why, at this unique distance from isolation, it becomes still more difficult to find words at once true and kind, or not untrue and not unkind. A poem by Philip Larkin entitled Talking in Bed from his collected poems published by Farrar, Straus and Giroux and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering writing about finances, food, art, wine, and culture from around the world. More at wsj.com/celebrateweekend. And this is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
Billy Collins, once called America's most popular poet by the New York Times, he was our country's poet laureate in 2001 through 2003, and then the poet laureate for the state of New York in 2004 and 2006, Billy Collins. I'm Laurie Scandling. This is Juno Afternoon, and with me now is Beth Weigel. She's executive director of Discovery Southeast, and it's the season for fun stuff outside. What's going on, Beth?
Well, of course, Outdoor Explorers has launched. I can't even imagine a better week to launch than this week. So the kids have been out hiking in the glorious sunshine. And, you know, on a day like today, you can only think it's just going to continue, right?
And, in fact, the weather shows that it will continue for at least a few days.
Good. Well, that's one of the big things that goes on at Discovery Southeast in the summertime is our Outdoor Explorers Day Camp. And we have most of our weeks full. We do 9 weeks total. But we still have a few openings left in our week next week, June 17th to the 21st. And that's Juno Rocks. So if you're into rocks and mining or geology or history of mining, things like that, those are the kind of places the kids go next week. And that's for 7 to 9-year-olds. And then we have space in our 2 weeks that are for 10 to 12-year-olds. And those are July 1st through the 5th, and that's Wild Adventure Week, Wilderness Adventure Week. We take them on a rafting trip down the Mendenhall, and we also are going to try some paddle boarding, maybe out at Amalga or something like that, a little more adventurous paddle boarding that week.
Saw four people paddle boarding out at Lena last night.
Yeah.
They were out there.
It's a full-on up-and-coming cool thing to do in Juneau, and the Blue Nose Surf Shop helps us out with the paddle boards and the wetsuits and things like that. So he's been really supportive. So that's July 1st through the 5th for 10 to 12-year-olds, Wilderness Adventures. And then our other week that has some space open, July 29th through August 2nd, also for 10 to 12-year-olds, and that's our Alpine Adventures. So head up the tram, and I know they're doing something else exciting that week that I can't think of right now. But we try to make the adventures for the 10 to 12-year-olds a little bit more adventurous, I guess, in that sense.
Is each camp a theme that's 1 week long, and can a child or a young person take all of the camps?
Right. We do have some repeat possibilities. Most of the weeks are full now, except for next week and those two 10- to 12-year-old weeks. But we allow people to sign their kid up for up to 3 weeks, and each week does have a theme. Some of the other themes for the summer, this week was the Glacier Goonies, so they're checking out all the glacier cool things all around. And we also have some beachcombers and the, some other weeks that include journey downstream, so looking at streams. And so just there's a lot of different themes for each week. And our leaders this year, Megan Bush, she's returning from last year. She grew up with Nature Studies, which is one of our other programs, and remembers going out with Steve Murley. So it's great to have young people returning to do the work of taking the young people out now. And we also have an assistant naturalist. Her name's Hannah Clater, and she is our Alaska Conservation Foundation intern for the summer. So we really appreciate that they fund an internship for us each summer. And she's come all the way from Virginia, so she's going to be great, and she's got a lot of enthusiasm, and they're a dynamic duo, those two ladies. And we're also going to have a couple other fun interns visiting us in July from Austria, so we have some great personnel and people lined up to take the kids out. And the other big thing that's happening is that we are mounting our third annual Parade of Species in the 4th of July parade again. So you may have seen us in the last 2 years marching along the streets here in Juneau and Douglas. Last year we built a gigantic size calf, life-size calf humpback whale. That's not making a repeat visit this year, but we will have something much more earthy this year. That's our theme this year, is to kind of get down and dirty with the fungus and the you know, the kind of earthy creatures like worms and banana slugs and different kinds of bugs. So we've got a dragonfly that we're building, and some of our repeat costumes that you'll see this summer in the parade will be the mountain goat and the great blue heron, an octopus, a beaver, bears, of course. And along with this, we try to raise a little bit of money to help support our program. So we ask that businesses sponsor a species, and we're trying to match a really generous donation from Greens Creek and Hecla, the Hecla Foundation, of $8,000. So if you're a business member out there, we feature your logo in the parade, and just like you can kind of think of it as how baseball teams, you know, they get their T-shirts with the logos of their sponsors for their team. Well, this is our Parade of Species team, and we're hoping that some businesses will help sponsor this effort, and it will all go to help support our programs, which are hands-on nature education programs for kids primarily.
If there was a business interested right now, where would they contact you, Beth? What's the best number for you?
Great. Well, we have a website that you can interact with us over, www.discoverysoutheast.org. Our email is info@discoverysoutheast.org, and our phone number is 463-1500. I'm going to be sending out some different letters, and we have some little flyers out, and we'll be at the chamber tomorrow talking about it. So, lots of places where you can learn a little bit more how to sponsor species, as well as for people who want to participate in the parade, we encourage you to join us. Kids, we want kids to come up with their own costume ideas as well. We have a lot of supplies if you need supplies to create a costume. We also have costumes that if people want to wear some of those feature species I just mentioned, we always love to get people to volunteer to do that because we have some really cool things that we've built onto external backpack frames. And you can just give us a call and register to wear one of those. Otherwise, we'd just love it if you showed up at about 10:30 at Cycle Alaska on the 4th of July for the Juno Parade. And then we'll march that parade. And then we'll transfer everything over to the Douglas Parade. And that will meet around 1:30. And it's just there at the start of the parade in Douglas. And it's a really fun time. We just have a great time. Perseverance Theater has some great costumes that we borrow. And it's a really fun time to see the kids and what they come up with, what kind of Alaskan species they like and really want to demonstrate in the parade. So it's a fun time, and it's the third year that we're doing this. So this is the year we really want to just see it take off and it become its own thing in the 4th of July parade every year. So
something to look forward to.
Exactly.
Can folks register online for the camp vacancies, or is that something they need to contact you directly about by telephone?
Right. You can check our website to see how many spaces are left in the camp weeks, and then give us a call is the easiest way to do it. But we do have our registration form online. You can download it and fax it or scan it and email it back to us.
And just to reiterate, you do have openings for the June 17th through 21st. That's next week. The theme is rocks. And the age range is 7 to 9 years old, and then you also have openings in the upcoming camps for 10 to 12-year-olds, July 1st through the 5th, and the week of July 29th through August 2nd. And the first round in July, the theme is Wilderness Adventure, and the second one is Alpine.
Yep.
So, all right, and you're at www.discoverysoutheast.org.
That's right, all spelled out, all one word. You can email us, call us at 463-1500. Make up those species costumes, and we'll see you on the 4th, or we'll see you out on the trail.
I'm going to be in a protozoa. Well, thanks for joining us, Beth.
All right.
Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, we'll learn about this Saturday's Juno Symphony Motown Concert. We'll get our appetites ready for the King Island Christmas Bake Sale. Kim Winicky will be here via phone with details about next month's Atlin Arts and Music Festival. And Catherine Hatch will be here with Arts Up. That's tomorrow with Writer's Almanac, Music and More, with Shona Strasser on Juno Afternoon. KTOO FM is broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay, tuned to K276 AF 103.1 in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K22BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. And we are online at www.ktoo.org. Weather, a little bit cloudy, possible thunder showers near the Canadian border, decreasing clouds tomorrow with increased highs and a bit of wind. Right now, 78 in the valley.
One of the characters in the Massachusetts State House once observed that what Whitey does with a gun, Billy does with a gavel.
A tale of two brothers revisited as Boston mobster James Whitey Bulger goes to trial.
Today is Wednesday, June 12th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up, opening arguments in the case against the man who once topped the FBI's most wanted list.
And from drought to drenched, the Midwest suffers through a season of extremes.
It's just too wet. We pulled in fields and tractors are spinning. It's just muddy.
And 50 years after the assassination of civil rights leader Medgar Evers, we'll listen to a song that memorialized him.
Imagine writing a song in the immediate aftermath of Medgar Evers' assassination and giving at least an understanding.